This insert is brought to you by Radio Cape Pulpit on 7 to 9 a.m. Visit us on www.capepulpit.co.za.
It's Voice of Change time with myself, Lauren Jacobs, here on Radio Cape Pulpit, 7 to 9 a.m. And you know what? We are wrapping up the 16 days of activism against women and children abuse on the show tonight. It's not going to be heavy, but it's going to be a really, really great, great time, a great, great show, because I have a very special guest that's going to be joining me all the way from the U.S. who's going to be sharing with us her testimony and her story of surviving childhood sexual abuse, and also sharing, you know, how this happened, what she went through, you know, things that we think about, questions that we ask, such as, well, where was God in all of this? You know, why didn't he stop the abuse? Or, you know, when she believed in Jesus, did things get better? How did that happen? You know, what was the journey like? And then also, of course, Crystal is so powerful in the area of helping other survivors that I'm going to be sharing with you some information on how to get in touch and what to do. You know what, if you are a survivor and you still need some help and assistance, or if you know somebody who is still in an abusive situation, this is so important for us to talk about, because we need to talk about sexual abuse. And it's something that in our faith communities, we don't talk too much about. And there often is a silence around this, especially for survivors and victims of childhood sexual abuse who are now adults and they don't have any safe spaces to turn to. So tonight in the show, my guest is Crystal Sutherland, and she's a wife, mother of three, a grandmother of two, and as I said, a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And she has learned how to thrive in Christ. She's also authored a book, Journey to Heal, 7 Essential Steps of Recovery for Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. And you know what? She has over 20 years of ministry experience, and she is just incredible as she leads other people in hope and healing that can only be found in Jesus. So without further ado, we're going to get into the show tonight. This is going to be really great, just hearing her story, learning from her. And it's important that we have conversations as believers around topics like this. So don't go anywhere. Crystal's going to be with us after this. Crystal, it's so great to have you with me on Voice of Change today. I know that we're going to have such a great show together and such a great time chatting about something that is so essential for us to hear as individuals, but also even as the body of Christ. So welcome to Voice of Change. Welcome to the show today.
Oh, thank you so much, Lauren. I'm honored to be here.
Now, I introduced you, you know, just before we went to the song, and I believe that everybody's now tuned in and listening, and I encourage the listeners to, you know, maybe say to someone who they know is, you know, maybe still a victim of sexual abuse or a survivor, to really tune in, because we're going to go quite deep today and it's going to be a really, really great show. Now, Crystal, I know that you are a survivor of sexual abuse, and I would love for you just to share a little bit of your story, your testimony with us, because you also have a testimony of redemptive hope, and that is so powerful. So how does your story really begin?
Well, my abuse started when I was 10 years old, or the sexual abuse did, but I think my story goes back a little bit further than that, where it kind of started when my parents divorced. My natural father and my mom, you know, they were just teens when they had me, babies really, and they got married because of me, and you know, I believe I was an unplanned blessing. And, you know, they didn't make it, and ended up, I think a couple years in, got divorced, and I ended up, living with my mother and saw my natural father occasionally. My mother has a story, her own story of childhood abuse, and literally had come out of that situation right into her marriage with my natural father. And so, as you can imagine, that brought with it a lot of challenges for her. And of course, for him, just being a young man, probably was not equipped, I would imagine, on how to help her. And so she also brought that experience and her hurt and her pain into parenting me. which is what we do as survivors often with our children. And so my mom, you know, living with her, I remember back from just early childhood, was most of the time wonderful. She's a wonderful lady, but it was enough times scary because she was volatile and could be abusive and or was abusive physically and emotionally. And that started when I was very young. And so I grew to become her. Wasn't sure what to expect with her, like in terms of if I did something wrong, was it going to be, you know, over the top discipline, or was it going to be, was I going to be let off the hook? Like, I just didn't know. And so I was probably about 9 years old when my mom, she had, by this point, she had, you know, through those 9 years, she, you know, of course, left my dad. It was just she and I for a while. Then she remarried again, and it didn't last very long. I think it was a couple of years tops. And then it was just her and I again for a while. And then she met someone and he moved in with us. And, you know, when I was about nine, and he was like a father figure that I didn't have, literally was wonderful. My mom was happy. Things were really calming down for her. Gosh, he came to all my, you know, school stuff, activities. I was very much into theater at school. And so my little elementary school put on a lot of little plays and such, and, you know, activities in that genre. And I was just consumed by that. And so, you know, he would come to all of that. He taught me how to play baseball. I mean, basketball. He was just, you know, and he was a good provider for our family. Well, obviously we trusted him. My mom got pregnant with their first child. I got married and she got pregnant with their first child. And that was my first sibling. I didn't have any brothers and sisters up to that point. And so it was probably, my mom was about maybe 8 months pregnant. I mean, she was not, you know, far from having my baby sister. And I was, I think, 10. I had just turned 10 at the time. And mind you, of course, not seeing my natural father regularly, not having any way of communicating with him unless my mom coordinated a phone call. And so there was no regular interaction or communication there, just this new person in our lives. And everything was great until one night it wasn't. One night it all changed. And that was when my mom, you know, like I say, she's about 8 months or so pregnant. And he just, you know, we were playing a game downstairs. My mom was upstairs in bed. And that very quickly turned into something completely strange to me and awful. And he basically molested me. And I begged him to stop. And told him it was wrong and that I was going to go tell mom. Mm. And he told me, don't do that. You're going to upset her. So when he said that, two things came to my mind. And that was the vision of when my mom was really upset, the things that she would do and how she could go over the top, with her discipline. And I thought that she would blame me, that somehow it would be my fault and that I would get in really big trouble. And then the other was my baby sister and her tummy, and just thinking, if I tell, this could ruin everything. And that's what my little 10-year-old brain.
Yeah.
I remember thinking all of that, like all at once.
Mm.
And so I didn't tell. I begged him to never do it again. I made a promise. And he did, but he didn't keep his promise. So the abuse went on for several years till I was 15. Yeah, and it just got progressively worse.
It's incredible to think that, you know, like you said, someone that, you know, taught you how to play baseball and was always there for you in a way, and someone that you trusted could one day just suddenly not be that same person. And a lot of times people ask the question of, how does that happen? You know, how is somebody a certain way for maybe quite a long time, and then suddenly they're not? Is that something that you've heard people ask or say to you, like, how is it that, you know, I trusted this person, or that you were a family member, or they are a family member, and then suddenly they just seem to change? What is that? You know, how do we understand that?
Well, I think that I didn't understand it then, but now, obviously, going through my own healing journey and then walking alongside others, and certainly just the research and such that I have done about, you know, sexual trauma and predators and seeing signs of sexual abuse, or, you know, for lack of a better word, profiling predators, which is near to impossible. What I have learned is that what my stepfather did was he groomed me. So it wasn't ever just a, I love this little girl, you know, that's my stepdaughter because she's my stepdaughter. He saw early on, I guess, my vulnerability, my mother's vulnerability. And he was just, you know, waiting for the right opportunity. He was grooming me. I don't think there was some like, aha, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, molest this girl now. I don't think it was ever that. I think it was a plan from the beginning. And what I have learned is, and what I've heard from women that I've come alongside who have child sexual abuse stories over and over and over again, is the same thing. This was a person I trusted. This was my soccer coach. This was my youth pastor. This was my uncle who taught me how to do all kinds of great, wonderful things and was always my cheerleader. And then, you know, all of a sudden he does this. And that's what sexual predators will do. I mean, even in cases where this is in adulthood, you know, oftentimes, like women that we come alongside at Journey to Heal, it's so sad. Young women in particular, you know, they will be seeing a guy they're going to college with or whatever for weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, it's like forever, you know, I've known this person forever. And they feel like they can trust them. And then before they know it, that person is starting to ask them to do things that, you know, they weren't planning on or really don't want to do per se, but they feel like they're going to lose the friendship if they don't. And it's just manipulation and on and on and on until finally they find themselves in a situation where they've been assaulted by the very person that they have been friends with, they thought, for weeks and weeks and weeks. I mean, I just think it's predator behavior, and part of that is just grooming. And so, yeah, I mean, that was terribly unfortunate and scary and awful for, oh gosh, from the time I was, you know, 10 until I was about 15 and a half. And in that span of time, you know, my mother became increasingly volatile, hostile at different times. I'm sure having another child and another young child, you know, in the home, my sister, and then financial troubles and all kinds of things, I'm sure all of it kind of contributed to her stress level. But there was more than just the sexual abuse going on. There was also just, my fear of her. And I didn't feel she was a safe person that I could tell. And I really, with every day that passed and every time I didn't tell, you know, of whatever new thing that happened, I felt more and more like an accomplice, like a responsible party, and that fault, and that if I did tell her, she would blame me. I mean, it just, that went on and on in my head for, you know, all those years. And, So we had, when, you know, this had first happened, you know, when I was 9, 10, you know, we lived on the West Coast at that time. And, you know, that's where I was born, in California. And my mom, when she got custody of me, you know, when I was, you know, 2 or whatever, she moved, kind of all over California. And then ultimately we lived in Portland, Oregon. Mm. So we lived in Portland until I was like 13. Something happened, I think, in our family. I think my stepdad lost his job, and there was just financial troubles and all kinds of things. And my mom, and my stepdad decided they were going to move to his family home, which is in Virginia. The sticks of Virginia. He inherited this house, which he called an estate. And my mother, I think she had visions of like Tara from Gone with the Wind.
yes.
In her head. And she, that was like her favorite movie. And I really believe that she had this idea. And I don't think he corrected her. I don't think he really helped her in any way to get a realistic picture of what kind of family home he was talking about. And so they ended up quitting their jobs. Well, I think he'd already lost his job. She ended up leaving her job. She had to work out a notice or whatever. So we ended up, she stayed behind in Portland, and we ended up traveling across the country. My sister and my stepdad and me, from Portland, Oregon to Virginia, just driving across the country in our ugly olive green Ford van. So I, like I said, I was 13 at the time, so getting ready to start 8th grade, and literally went from a very diverse culture and very open-minded. I mean, Portland, you know, Oregon, it was just very, you know, I don't know. It was a great place to grow up.
Yeah.
Up to that point, to A, the Bible Belt, and B, small, tiny little community in Virginia. So you can imagine the culture shock. And but in addition to that culture shock, there was this abuse and this stuff happening at home. And when we finally got to this family estate, it wasn't anything more than a old home that had been, it wasn't even a home. It was a schoolhouse that was built in the late 1800s. It was an old time schoolhouse with the big windows and the big rooms. And it didn't have electric heat. It had electricity, but not electric heat. It was all wood heat. So everything, you had to cut wood, carry in wood, and keep the wood stoves going in order to keep the house warm. And of course, Virginia gets very cold for several months out of the year. And so long and short of it is, it was quite a shock. And we, not only did we go from a nice little townhome, you know, with electric heat and cozy in a metropolitan kind of area to this, you know, out in the country, but we went into poverty too. So there was like also this financial shift. So we were on welfare, and my mom had a very, when she finally did, you know, arrive, you know, several months later, she couldn't find a job. It was awful on so many levels. So that's basically the backdrop of where I was at 13 when I first met Jesus, and the way that happened, because up to that point, we didn't go to church. I mean, I think we went maybe Christmas and Easter. Like, I think we were creasters. That's what I call it. we basically went Christmas and Easter. And I think we weren't even faithful in that. I think we missed some years. But Jesus was not a part of the equation for me or my family. But we make this move. We're living in literal poverty. It's a culture shock and change. My stepfather had family that lived like next door to us, but next door is not like a neighborhood next door. This is like a mile down the road or a half a mile down the road, kind of next door. And so there was a little girl, not much younger than me, that was a part of, you know, this extended family or whatever. And, I got to, you know her and hang out with her some, and she invited me to this youth thing, this church event. And I'd never gone to anything like that before. And I thought, well, sure, why not? So I went, and this was before my mother had made it from Portland to Virginia. Mm. So she wasn't there yet. And so I went, and, it was a little tiny Pentecostal Holiness church, very charismatic church. And of course it was no any different, you know, from anything else, because I hadn't gone that much. So I just didn't know what to expect. But the preacher was preaching hellfire and brimstone, I remember.
Wow.
And it was scary, Lauren. It was scary.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm 13, and he's got like white hair, and he's just, you know, yelling and screaming and about sin and hell and all these things. But he was sharing the gospel. And he did a good job of sharing the gospel. But the thing was my shame that I carried because of what my stepfather was doing, and the guilt that I felt, the responsibility that I took on myself. I heard the gospel. It was filtered through all of that. And so even though this preacher was not, make no mistake, he was not saying this directly to me, but I was hearing, as he was sharing the gospel, I was hearing, I'm going to go to hell because of what my stepfather's doing to me. Now, again, the preacher didn't say that, but my shame filtered it that way, filtered the gospel that way. And so out of fear, I gave my heart to Christ and that's how our relationship kind of started. But Jesus is so awesome. God is so wonderful and gracious and good that it wasn't long after that I came to know, like I started going to Sunday school. I started going every time church doors were open, I was going, and mainly out of fear, because it was just one more thing like, oh, I've got to do this or I'm going to get in trouble sort of thing. And so I went and I learned, you know, that he loves me. He really does just love me. And that I can be forgiven and that his grace is enough and all these things. And I learned that relationship is a safe place. Very first scriptures that I ever memorized was Proverbs 3:5-6, which says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. And that is exactly what he did, Lauren. You know, it took me a while to trust him. I'm still learning to do that. And I'm 52 years old.
And I think that's important, Crystal, to butt in there.
No,
you know, safe spaces. I think that's what people don't realize as well, is that when you're a survivor of abuse and trauma, you know, God himself isn't a safe space. Like, it's so easy. Sometimes people spread the gospel, you know, and say, God's this loving father. But if you come out of a situation and a relationship, a home of abuse, the father figure, if it was your father or your uncle, maybe your guardian, the father figure is in the safe space. So how do you say God is a safe space if God is this father? And I think that this is an important thing that people don't realize sometimes, if maybe they haven't been through that, because they just see God is this loving father, you know, so he's obviously safe, but it's not like that for everybody. And I think that we need to continue to talk about your journey of healing when we get back from this song, because I think that the journey of healing is so important to understand, because everybody's journey is going to look different. And we, I think, as Christians, as believers, we need to, you know that maybe for ourselves, but also then to help other people and to understand that and become safe spaces ourselves. So we're going to go to a really, really quick song break. I'm here with Crystal, and she's sharing about her journey of healing childhood sexual abuse, journey of helping others. And we're going to get deeper into this, but we're going to take a really, really quick break. Enjoy the song, and we'll see you when we get back. You're with me, Lauren Jacobs, here on Radio K Pulpit for Voice of Change. And today we are talking deeply about healing from sexual abuse. Now, that is a very, very big topic, we must just say, before we go any further. And I really, really encourage you towards the end of the show, Crystal's going to be sharing some details with you on how to connect. You know, maybe, you know, you want to get hold of her or a group or whatever. We'll share all those details, you know, towards the end of the show, because like I say, this is a big topic and we can't go so deep as we would want to go and give you all the tools. But you know what? This is such a good conversation to be having. And so, Crystal, the learning journey, the journey of healing, the things that you learned about, you know, God and the things that you learned about Christ, again, what we're talking about before this song, him being a safe space, you know, obviously probably the very first, I want to say person, you know, God is a person, you know, where you probably felt that that was a safe space for you. He was a safe, became that safe space, and you're still learning that as well. You know, one of the things I think about is on many people's healing journeys, and many, maybe people that haven't even begun the healing journey, but they feel so often that if God is so loving, you know, and if he's such a caring father and a caring God, you know, why didn't he stop or prevent this abuse from happening? And I've heard people share that and say that, and I totally understand where it's coming from, you know, but can you shed some light on how you see this as a survivor today?
Yes. So that is something I had to really wrestle down in my own journey of healing. The quick answer is which took me a long time to get to personally. But the quick answer is this, you know, God did not intend for any of us to go through any kind of abuse or assault or any of that. That is because we live in a sin-filled world. That's because of the fall of man. All of that is a part of a fallen world, not God's original intent. If you look at, you know, even just in Genesis, and you see how he created, you know, everything, and then, you know, he creates man, and he, you know, places him in the garden, and it's all of it is just, you know, lovely and exactly all that, you know, all that Adam, you know, was going to need. And he gives him Eve, you know, creates Eve, and the two of them have, I mean, just this perfect scenario. I love what, you know, in Genesis where, you know, it talks about where God would walk with Adam in the cool of the day. I mean, that's the kind of relationship that God wanted to have or wants to have with us. And that kind of, safe place. But then, you know, I think about choice when I think about the very question you just asked. And God gave us all a choice. He gave Adam and Eve a choice, you know, to obey him or not, to love him or not, by placing the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the middle of that beautiful garden, that perfect place. Now, he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
He certainly didn't have to do that. And they would have just, you know, they wouldn't have had a choice. It would have just been, you know, bask in the beauty of that life. But they had a choice, and they were tempted to go their own way. We all know the story, you know, of how it went and the reality of how it went. And they did. They chose their own way. And by doing that, they disobeyed God. And in that, they couldn't continue to live. I mean, they, you know, that's the fall, basically. And from that, you know, the word talks about how all, you know, the earth was going to be, you know, cursed, and childbearing was going to become painful now. And I mean, we, you know, all those things are there in terms of what happened to mankind and what happened to even just our environment because of that choice, that sin. And so when I think about, you know, when I think about why didn't God rescue me, I have to go back further and go, well, hold on. I have free will. God gave me a choice. And not only did he give it to me, but he gave it to you. He gave it to my stepdad. He gave it to my mother. He gave it to every human being. I mean, we all have the choice to follow God's ways or to follow our own, to trust in him or to lean on our own understanding. And unfortunately, when people, you know, we all don't make good choices. Every single one of us, you know, have got to times where we have done things or said things or behaved in ways that we regret. And then some people, they make choices that are very harmful, like my stepdad, and abusers in general, you know? Yeah. And so I can't blame God for that. I mean, I can't blame God because my stepdad decided to use his free will to hurt me. I mean, it's not what God intended. I know what God intended. I can look at Genesis and I can see that, what he intended. And then you look at how he sent Christ. You know, for me personally, Lauren, you know, I went through, I didn't really start to realize that I needed healing till I was 38 years old and a stay-home mother of three. It was then, as my children were coming up to that age of 9 and 10, my mother in particular, and seeing her in that stage and her innocence, it hit me. It hit me so hard that I didn't get that. All that changed for me at that age. And I remember just everything kind of flooding forward, anger, resentment, just bitterness and hurt. And that didn't really get directed towards God. It was more towards my passive and aggressive abusers, you know, my stepdad and my mother. And I didn't know what to do with it. Fortunately for me, I had a mentor at my church. I was very, you know, from pretty much 13 on, I was pursuing Christ. I still made a handful of mistakes. I still, you know, I became a, you know, I guess I need to rewind back because you were asking me earlier and about my story. I need to rewind back, and this is important to share because it also is going to help answer for anyone who's listening. It'll help answer the God question. Why, you know, if God's so good, why doesn't he rescue? So I need to rewind back a little bit and say this. The short answer is he gave us all free will, and God is good. He's always good and he's always faithful. You can look at his character. It's not his intent. It's just not even in him to intend for anyone to be or cause anyone to be sexually abused. And to rescue would mean that he would have to do that statistically here in the U.S. He'd have to do it almost every minute. Yeah. He'd have to be rescuing someone every minute because the statistics are this is happening to someone every 73 seconds. And I mean, that's just based on reported cases. So it's a heart issue. And that would mean that God would have to remove our free will for this. He'd have to remove sin from the world. And how would he do that? Mm-hmm. You know, how would he do that without wiping out ability to choose? So it really comes down. It's not God intending this. It's man making and women making very bad decisions, that are inflicting pain on others. It's sin. And that sin is a heart issue. So rewinding back, you know, when I gave my heart to Christ, I came home. I'm still being abused. God did not, even though I gave my heart to Christ, I didn't get rescued and pulled out of my, like everything didn't just all of a sudden magically change. I still had to go home to that abusive home, and I had to go and I still endured that abuse. Now you would think giving my heart to Christ, like, well, there would be some magic that would happen and I would just, you know, like, exactly. I don't know.
Exactly.
But it doesn't work that way. And that's not how, I mean, God can do anything. He could have easily completely plucked me out of that situation. And he does that in some people's cases. That's not how it happened in mine. And what he did for me, Lauren, is this. I followed that, you know, path of trusting him, going and learning more about him, reading my Bible, talking to him in the best way that I knew how. And I remember going to Sunday school and learning all those Old Testament stories. And I remember, you know, especially about, like, you know, the plagues and the in Egypt and the, you know, the Israelites being brought out of Egypt and all that. And I remember in that context, you know, I was probably 14 at the time, 13, 14 at the time. I remember begging God, please send a plague and wipe out my parents.
Why not?
Why not? I mean, I totally believe that he could do this big, massive rescue. And I wanted him to do that. And I begged and begged and begged. But that didn't happen. And I remember, and the abuse escalated. And I remember thinking about suicide. I remember thinking about homicide. I remember really trying to plan, like, how could I run away? But I didn't. Any of those things, it didn't, you know, happen, for various reasons, fear being probably the biggest. And I remember just asking God over and over to please help me, you know what to do to get out of this, to make it go away, to make it stop. And what he did as I pursued my relationship with him, as I talked to him, and again, in my, I was just 13, 14. I didn't know a lot about anything. And 13, 14, and 15. In that time, he gave me courage. Mm-hmm. He gave me a boldness. He was there in a way, and I could sense him, and I knew that me and him together meant I had power and strength that I didn't have on my own, if that makes sense. And yes. So he gave me a boldness. And then with that boldness, I remember I was about 15 and a half. The abuse had escalated to a really bad point. And I remember threatening more and more, if this doesn't stop, I am going to tell mom. And I was at the point that I didn't care how she responded. I didn't care if she harmed me. I didn't care. Literally, I was at the point, I didn't care if I died. I wanted this to stop. And so I did. Something had happened that was pretty bad, and I won't go into detail about that, but I defended myself. My stepfather got a terrible black eye because of it. And it had to be explained. And so I remember the Holy Spirit, even in my little 15 and a half year old brain, telling me, now's your chance. Now you need to speak up. And I did. And I told my mother what happened. And I couldn't, even at 15 and a half, articulate what he had been doing all those years. I didn't have the words, but I told her he had been hurting me and I wanted it to stop. And the long and short of it is, she did not leave him. She didn't report it. She didn't respond right. She did blame me. She stayed in the marriage. The abuse stopped, but the dysfunction was horrible. So here I am, you know, I had trusted God. I mean, I had every right to be angry, but I think I had kind of given up a little bit on the inside of me, and I started going on a downward spiral. I stopped kind of going to church and just kind of went on a downward spiral, ended up becoming very reckless, with boys, found myself in a situation where, a compromising situation with a boy I went to school with, and unfortunately was assaulted, and then got pregnant from that. Wow.
Crystal, I'm so sorry. You know what? Our time is up, and I feel like there is so much more that I really would love to know and would love for you to share with the listeners. But I really think as well that people need to get in touch. You know what I mean? People need to get in touch with you. You've also written a book called Journey to Heal. It's 7 Essential Steps of Recovery for Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. And I really want you to be able to just share, you know, in closing with the listeners, how do they get in touch with you? You know, I know that you have amazing, amazing, you know, things that you do. There's mentors all over the US and also in the UK that can help people, support groups. How do people get in touch with you? And how do they, you know, can learn more about your story, can learn more about how to heal? Tell us how people can do that.
Yes. So, people can go to journeytohealministries.org. So www.journeytohealministries.org. And all of our resources and information is on there. The Journey to Heal Ministries is based on the book that I wrote called Journey to Heal, and it is 70 Essential Steps of Recovery for Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. But that is, it's really for anyone who has been through any kind of sexual trauma at any stage in their life. So
I really encourage people to do that because I've read the book and it's so amazing. Mm-hmm. I really encourage people to go over to the website, and I know that you have a lot of things that's going to be happening in the future as well. That's going to be really, really great for people, but not only, like you said, survivors, but also families as well. I'm sure that can learn, and people in faith communities that can learn. And so, Crystal, I want to say thank you so much for sharing your journey with us, because it's so important that we hear and we understand. The more that we hear, the more that we understand, the more that we can be a blessing to other people who are also survivors. So again, Crystal, thank you so much for being here today. May God just richly bless you in everything that you do going forward.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me, Lauren.
I hope that something from tonight's show has really resonated with you. If you feel, you know, that you have connected with Crystal's story, maybe her story is so similar to your story, then don't forget to get in touch. You know, Crystal connects with people from all over the world and knows of many different mentors, psychologists, support groups. So get in touch with her, journeytohealministries.org, but also get some of the resources. You know, maybe you are a deacon, an elder, a faith leader in your community. Maybe you just want to encourage your pastor to know more about this issue, then please, you know, get the resources, do some reading, do some connecting. I had Mary DeMuth on my show a couple of months ago. She's written so many great books that are available here in South Africa, like the book called Hashtag We Too. I mean, it's all about how the church can get involved in helping and assisting survivors of childhood sexual abuse, as well as ongoing sexual abuse. This is a topic that needs to be spoken about in our communities. It's been so great to be with you on Voice of Change today. May you have an amazing, amazing day, and may God richly bless you.
This insert was brought to you by Radio K Pulpit on 729 AM. Visit us on www.kpulpit.co.za.